Just if we could switch off our phones now. Members, thank you very much. I think we need to start. I'm not sure whether there are people who have apologized for your guys, so that we know how many are we going to be. Maybe let me just give over to you to tell us whether there are people that have apologized for this meeting. So if you could tell us, the meeting is open now. Well, I think we need to start. Probably we don't even need a quorum. Members, we know that the year is coming to a close. And obviously, we need to look at it. I was hoping that this meeting is not going to last for more than 30 minutes. But I was very optimistic yesterday. I chaired a meeting that I thought was going to take less than 15 minutes, but it ended up taking 3 hours. So I don't want this to happen today, but if it happens to be like that, we'll handle it to that end. But as I'm saying that we're getting to a close of the year, and most of the time when you get to that time, this is the time that you always look back and see what have you done, what have you achieved in that particular year. But the interesting thing about this particular year is that it's almost mid-term. It's almost half of our term being in Parliament. So definitely we need to look and see what have we done? Have we achieved what we wanted to achieve? If not, where are the potholes that we need to close so that when we start next year, we start at a footing that we know where we have faltered. But in doing those type of things, I think it becomes important that we must be evidence-based. Because it's very easy for us politicians to work for our tummy feelings. You just think that, politicians always think that, no, if I say this must happen, even if I don't have evidence, it has to happen because I've got this gut feeling that it must happen that way. But I want us to be scholastic and make sure that whenever we assess what has happened, we must be evidence-based that this is what has happened. This is what we need to do. And obviously, we need to blame ourselves where we need to blame ourselves. We need to thank ourselves where we need to thank them, thank ourselves. And this will be happening. I would like us to do that Nicodemusly as a committee and at the same time as individual members of the committee as to what has been our contribution. I've requested, or I'm going to request for your guys and some of the secretariat that we look through all the things that we have done, specifically for this year, all the challenges that we have faced, and probably that document be given to us at the beginning of the year that this is what we did, these were the outcomes, these were the number of laws that we passed, if there's any, which I suspect there's none. And these are the areas that we visited, and these are the things that we found. And in compiling that, it's going to be our basis for the starting of working next year. Obviously, one would have liked to add, I know the ANC had asked me to assess its members. Lutuli House asked me to assess its members, but the way I assessed them, I just said everybody was good. But obviously, that was not particularly true. But Nicodemusly will have to probably sit one-on-one with myself, all the members, so that we can say, this is how I found you, how did you find me, and these are the areas that probably you didn't do well. We'll see. I'll sit with everybody separately, probably at the beginning of the year, so that we can move in unison so that people can tell me about myself and I can tell them about themselves as I was watching the proceedings that were going. But I must thank you, members, not only for this year, except for the new members that have joined, including the Whip, who has apologized, by the way. I must thank you because I had, these past 2 years, I've had a very good time with you. And it was quite impressive what we're doing. And we've done together, we've suffered together, we've done things together, we've enjoyed together, we've cried together, but I think we still have got another 3 years that we're going to be together, and I'm hoping that the future is going to be bright. But all we need to do is to look at where we had mistakes and correct them as we are moving forward. So, with the basically, this meeting was about that, and part of the things that we're going to do with the Secretariat is to plan for the first 3 months, which is going to be a very difficult first 3 months because there's elections, there's opening of Parliament, there's budget speeches, there's elections in the process. So, but we're going to try and make some plan, which we're going to email to all of you so that you could have a look at it and add whatever that you want to add. One other part that I think is very crucial, we talked about visiting internationally. And the committee, the Secretariat has been on working very hard trying to find a way of making us visit one country, which we have not discussed, we have not agreed. I must be open. I wanted us to go to Brazil and see their national health insurance, but people can come up with their ideas. But what we are getting, as we were trying to organize that trip, we got a list that says we can only go, that is coming from Chair of Chairs, which is part of that being controlled somewhere as the committee. They are saying that the only time that we can go out and visit outside our 10 with some other departments, some other portfolio committees, would be November 2011 to January 2012. Which, when I discussed with the Secretariat, they were going to say that is too far for us. But I'm sure we can go and discuss with them that, look, we're not going to be able to go at this time. I'm not sure whether they'll agree, but I'm just mentioning to you as we're trying to organize, when are we going? But they've given us a letter that says arts and culture, SCOPA, health, labor, home affairs, public works, justice, and defense, they can only go towards the end of next year, which I think is a little bit unfair, but we can discuss it here. So basically, there's nothing today that we're going to be doing except wishing each other, because this is the last committee meeting, wishing each other a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year, and at the same time trying to look at what have we done to now, and in the areas where we have had challenges, what do we think we can do to better those things, focusing on what we're supposed to be doing as a committee, doing that particular assessment, and at the same time doing a program for next year. I know very well that our work is supposed to be oversight. We're supposed to make laws and we're supposed to pass budget for the department. But we know what's happening in the department, that there's huge challenges. But I think we have had a positive contribution in some of the things that have happened in the department. With that, members, I'll just give over to you. I was just opening, trying to tell you why you are here today. And I would like it not to be very long, so that we can quickly go and organize ourselves. But it's up to you now to, I'm opening it for discussion. And it must be just an open discussion. We're not going to restrict it to any particular thing. Thank you. Thank you, members.
Okay, I can do
preferably. Thanks. I'm also happy that we have come to this juncture. And I think health it's very important department. You see, we in Parliament we have abrupt changes. That is, this committee, most probably the next term, it won't be there. We're going to see new faces. But fortunately, in our midst, I am told we have Mr. Honorable Walters here, who has been there for a while. There is no continuity. This abrupt change, they bring abrupt challenges. So I heard you, the chairperson, you were talking about the secretary doing this. I think the previous committee also had their own challenges. Their reports should be there, and there is no handing over. We must learn from those reports. I think it is also important. And the visit internationally, I think this has been deliberated upon. You know, I know we want to go overseas, and I agree also that we should check. But if they are not flexible, we must live with the time frames given to us. Yes, like the chairperson was saying, we had a very long meeting of our study group yesterday, unintentionally, but to the good. I'm very happy to be amongst you members, honorable members. I'm going to learn a lot. But like you were saying initially, let's not be long here. Say it talked about 30 minutes. I'm talking about an hour if we're too long. Thanks, Chair.
Somebody is going to talk about 2 hours. We'll be ascending.
Thanks very much. And I appreciate
one thing that I forgot, Dada Khanna, is that I forgot that I was trying to follow you. That's why I cut my hair.
No, I can see you. You. I don't know what the bureaucracy did to you, but you look different. I just wanted us to early next year, at least to deal with the issue of the two provinces we visited, Eastern Cape and Free State, that at least we should deal with the issue of the report and call the department with the MEC to tell us what have they done, because we did give them copies of the report, I hope so, that the provinces. So we should actually get the progress report from them earlier this year. It will be ideal if, as we close, bureaucracy can interact with them in advance, so that next year they know that either in February or March we'll want to have the discussions with them about that, taking into consideration all other things which takes place in terms of budgets and things like that. We promised the deans that we will go back to them. The man in which Mr. Walters, Honorable Walters, chased them away. We did promise them that next we will call them again, and then I think that's what something we've got to work on now, so that next year we also do that. The other thing is that, you know, the department has had they launched a lot of campaigns, they've got a lot of activities. We are, as a portfolio committee, I don't think that we participate in those particular campaigns. Sometimes I get an invitation after the event. So we have got to find a way of linking with the department in terms of the campaigns they wage, so that we can have a role. This issue of overseas, we don't want to go to overseas for the sake of going overseas. But my understanding was that we have got the right to go there at least once a year. But I don't know whether it was two times the term, or it was. I can be clarified about that. But what I want us to look at when we go there should not just be NHI. I think the issue of drugs and alcohol abuse is really important. I don't know how other members feel, but I think to us, to me, there's two issues. I mean, most of the people accidents in this country are caused by drunk drivers or drunk pedestrians, and a lot of deaths result, apart from HIV AIDS. We can't go anywhere for HIV AIDS. But for these two, I think we can develop something if we look at it differently.
If I could comment on some of the things that you've mentioned, I think we already interacted with these two provinces that we visited. Interestingly, when the head of development in the Eastern Cape was still with us when we went to Eastern Cape, and when they promised that there were certain things that they wanted to sort out before they give us a report. Now we're going to be communicating with them saying that, have you finalized those things that you wanted to finalize and give us a report so that we're going to call them here. We will try for both of them, Free State and then Eastern Cape. The deans, actually communicated with them that we wanted to call them back, and they want to be called back again themselves. But the problem is that this is a very bad time for them. These are the exam times. And I suspect even in January, the reason why we called them, we wanted to see what's the criterion of their admissions, which were late, and even in January they'll be admitting. So we might be late when we see them, but we'll be seeing them for future. But basically we wanted to see the transformation, and that is the situation. Well, the invitations, I think the main one that we need to test this thing is the 1st of December, which I've heard from the minister is going to be slightly different from the previous ones, where there's a rally. I think he's going to be visiting homesteads. And they have decided that they're going to go to... They looked at the statistics, the recent statistics that have been released. And I think the two West provinces is KZN and Mpumalanga. And they decided to go to... Is it Piet Retief? But it's in Mpumalanga, and that's where the president is going to be. And they are very interested that we as members should be part of that team that is going to be going there. So I'm sure we'll be getting an invitation, and we'll have to communicate via the cell phones or the computers, the emails. But we'll be doing it, and this is where we're going to test them. So I cannot agree with you more about the drugs and alcohol and the contribution that they're making. I don't have clear evidence, but I'm told that most of the budget from health, after the infections, I'm talking about HIV and AIDS, hospital-acquired infections, I'm talking about these neonatal diarrheal diseases, after the infections, and that includes HIV and AIDS, by the way, after the infections, it's rot. And those roads are related to alcohol. And we're at a very difficult time now where people are going to be drinking and driving. And I don't think they're even deterred by this, what they were doing about that complaining about that. So I agree with you that this is something that we need, because a lot of taxpayers' money goes to these hospitals, unnecessarily so. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to arrange another report, or the Coke report. You know, remember that ad, the Coke, the drank ad, the drank Coke, and the okay, that's anyway. But in that report, there was a lot of recommendations that the department had to report back within certain time periods on lots of issues. I mean, I've got it here, it's like 3 pages of stuff. I mean, that certainly must take precedence next year, most definitely. And then, last week's meeting, we said we'd have the Directorate of Radiation Control back early next year so we can see their plan and what they've done to find those lost sources of radiation. That must be done as a matter of urgency. And then, of course, it's been mentioned the medical schools must come back. And then also we had the Doctors Association here last week, which we said, I mean, they came here for like 20 minutes and they had to leave. So, yeah, so they must certainly come back. And then the overseas trip, I mean, look, we've got important legislation coming, NHI, and I know it's been said that we shouldn't just go over for NHI to overseas, but the fact is, I think it's probably the most important piece of legislation coming before Parliament, and to wait till November just seems ridiculous. But I also concur that we should also be doing more research into alcohol and drug abuse. It's becoming a real problem in this country. And if you could link the two up, it would be fantastic. Okay, thanks.
Members, we're noting some of the suggestions that you're making, and we'll try and incorporate them into all those things. The radiation, I think the main thing what we want in radiation, if we can agree, is that radiation goes beyond the Department of Health. I think we should be asking even that agency to be part of the meeting, because much as it's going beyond health, even that one that doesn't belong to health affects our health in South Africa. So that's why we've got to call them. So we'll be calling them. Obviously, the doctors and the SAMA will actually call them. By the way, let me explain what SAMA is. South African Medical Association is a union of professionals. But we need to meet them because they are part of the people who are making health to be health. So we need to understand if they've got challenges, and it seems as if they've got huge challenges. So this is something that we are going to be looking at. Interestingly, there are some doctors who are foreign doctors who are coming from the African countries who have been in South Africa for more than 10 years. And some of them have retired. And after their retirement, they've taken contracts. They are employed contractually. But now the contract says, it is said, the policy says they must be given 2 terms, and after that they mustn't be given any other. Why I'm mentioning that they are not South Africans, but they've been here and they've become South Africans, is that there's a policy that says we must not take people from the southern countries because we are training them. But these ones are already in South Africa, they've been working here. We need to find a way of talking to the department and making sure that they can extend their contracts because we've got a shortage of doctors, and they're already here. But this is something that we can discuss next year. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say. These are people who have retired because they've got beyond 65. Now, after 65, you're given a year on contract. And then when you complete that, you're given another year. After that, you can't be employed. But they're still active and working with the shortage that we have. I think we need to find a way of making sure that they can be contacted even further. Mainly their doctors and their specialists. Okay, I saw Memora.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue of the overseas trip, a lot of people have spoken to it, and I also believe that we don't have to go overseas for the sake of just going overseas. We need to know what is it that we want to achieve when we come back, and not only achieve, but make sure that that is implemented as well, and share the information. And then we mustn't forget something, as we've spoken about SAMA. Last time during the meeting, we've spoken about DINOSA as well. But we mustn't mix these issues at a very early stage, because I think we need to give SAMA their chance, as they requested, maybe alone for the first meeting, before we even include, or whatever we discuss with SAMA, some things might enlighten certain issues, in nursing, allied, and other professionals. Then we can start encompassing everyone. And then with the radiation control as well, we mustn't forget the NESA, that other whatever, agency, and all the other stakeholders. And then, Chair, for next year, we've been talking about primary healthcare, but as a committee, we're not doing anything. We're just talking about it. We're not doing anything. I've got a suggestion that next year, the district health system, there's somebody who in different provinces, there's different managers at district health service level. So I think at some stage, you need to invite those people, because we believe that PHC is the entry level. And if the entry level is rotten, is not working, there's no way the upper level can function, because then everything, we know the problems, I don't even have to allude to them, we know the problems that we're having in the health sector. So I'm suggesting that at some stage, whether the Department of Health is here with them or not, we need district health managers to come and tell us what is it that they're doing, what are the challenges. Maybe we can start there, not to maybe scrutinize them, you know, critically at first, but get to know what is it that they're doing, what are their challenges, and then start from there working with them. Not separately as such, but it will be interesting to have, you know, such a meeting only with the district, because we talk of issues of budget, I mean, in overall health budget. But we it will be interesting to meet the specific, you know, sections, you know, who also use the very same health budget. So if next year at some stage we can start developing that relationship with PHC and start looking at it as if it was, you know, an independent entity, you know, trying to fix whatever problems that we have there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ms. Mamad. I think this is very important because it's helping us in another challenge that we have, which you know. You know what, a portfolio committee for the national parliament. But the actual work is done at the provinces, and we never know what is going on. And those provinces have got their own legislators and their portfolio committees, and we don't know whether they are saying the same thing that we want to prioritize primary health. So, and interestingly, on Monday, I was in there was a workshop in Joburg where they were talking about hospital-acquired infections. It was very interesting that the people that were there were those people that are handling infection control in these institutions. And they were complaining that they are never recognized by the department. They were the junior staff that is actually handling, yet they are so important. And I promised them that we are going to call them here, because the reason why I thought that we needed to call them here is that I think they actually calculated that in countries where they've done research on hospital-acquired infections, which is actually coming from the community, something that you could block, it's costing those countries that have done now, I'm talking about USA, I'm talking about Canada, it's $180 million. That is costing taxpayers. Just the infections that occur in ICU, that could have been avoided. And the unfortunate part is that in South Africa, we don't have research on that. In the whole of Africa, and Africa is the one that is hit most by those hospital-acquired infections, which are very unnecessary. And that goes on with what we usually do. And I'm a culprit too, where viewers would come to me and say, I've got a sore throat. I just write a prescription for antibiotics. And then she goes and there, and somebody writes without examining her. And what that does, if she does not get better and she goes to hospital, whenever they give her antibiotics, they are resistant to that. So there's no antibiotic that is going to, because she's been getting a lot of antibiotics all over the place, unfairly so. And it's creating a whole lot of problem for taxpayers, because now they've got to get very expensive drugs to cure her. And that is going to come from taxpayers. These are some of the things that were very interesting. But I agree with you that, in saying these things, I'm trying to agree with you that we need to call those that are doing the work. We call them here so that they can mention their challenges. And when we meet the department, we say, department, you don't take care of your district managers there. You don't take care of your clinics there. And we are talking about primary health. I'm trying to agree with you. Okay, thanks. Let me get my Kenya, and then it's going to be you.
I thank you, Chairperson. I think when we are doing this sort of analysis, we must not forget also to call the National Council. We made lengthy discussions about this issue of the capacity of the integrated approach in the nursing profession, which we observe that it is more or less taking the nurses away from the patient by this degree level. Then I think this 4-year course, we did mention that it doesn't help us, because they don't have the experience as such, because of the integration and the shortening of the 1-year courses, post-basic courses for nurses. Therefore, I think they must also call them so that we know how far are they with the curriculum, with the new curriculum, they were saying to us they are going to have it. That will also help us to give inputs also to them by recommending some of the issues. If they are still in the middle of making the curriculum. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think this is very important. In fact, I'm thinking as we are talking, that probably when we call these councils, we don't need to call one. Even the HPSA should be here, especially when we're calling some of these professions. And we should be, maybe when we call the nursing council, it should be the day that we're calling the deans, and we call the HPSA on that particular day, so that they come together at the meeting, so that we can hear, and then the regulatory bodies should comment, and the others should say, this is what we're trying to do, and the curriculum is going to be like this. And even the deans be here, because what you're talking about, are actually controlled by the deans in these universities, and we definitely need to know how are they dealing with that, so that we can know. Thanks, Makai.
Just talking for the last time, Chair, so that you're meeting. I really don't want you to take 2 hours. Look, I think when we deal with this issue of human resource development, we have got to call the health sector. I don't know what they call it now. Is it still health sector?
Well, that's right, I'm still health sector. I don't know what they call it.
It's interfering. But I think we have got to call them, because of the amount of money these sitters have and how they use it, you know, in the long term. I think this approach of giving people a 6 months, 3 months courses does not help us as a country.
Yeah.
We have got to find a way in which how the money can be utilized effectively in the long term to produce people. The other issue I'm going to raise might be a little bit controversial. I have not done research on it. The issue of private medical costs and the abuse of medical aid by private doctors. I'm raising this thing because I've just discovered something which I might not be fully informed about it. There are gynecologists who have just made the cesarean thing is now some sort of an income-making process. Almost all first-time women who are giving birth are taken through that. And some of them have decided that on Tuesdays is the day on which I produce children. And everybody comes for the operations. And when you say, no, I want to give birth naturally, they say, I won't be available on that day. I don't want to be called at 12 o'clock during the night to come and give, to assist you to give birth. You either come on the Tuesday or you look for another doctor. I've met 4 people who all were giving birth for the first time, who had the 2 is in Frenchen and 2 is Johannesburg, and the attitude of the gynecologist was the same. So, and it's more expensive because it's an operation than when you give birth naturally. I don't know the medical implications of that for the people, but we have got to look into the practice of that. I haven't done much, but when I met these people, I really got concerned that people who are not knowledgeable are forced into giving consent to do something which they, under normal circumstances, wouldn't have agreed if it is not their doctor who says so to them. I'm just saying, these 2 issues of private medical costs, is it really what the good of it? Because I was told that in a capitalist society, everything's cost is what people are willing to pay. It is not what it really costs. So I'm just raising the 2 points.
Thanks, Dr. Khanna. In 2020, you've really touched on something that is very serious. I've seen you, man. You've touched on something. In fact, when we started, when I was told that I'm going to be the chairperson, the first area that I went to was, it was organized by BHF. I was invited there. And when I was talking, I said, the private healthcare industry has not been looked into by Parliament. And I think that's where we need to go. And there, the public health sector, all they're interested in making sure that people are better if they can make them better. But on the private healthcare sector, you're balancing two things. You're balancing profit on one side, and on the other side, dealing with people. Now, you need to be ethically honest and with integrity to say, you don't have to pay me for something that is not going to be good for you. But it needs somebody who's got good ethics. Because if I don't have good ethics and good integrity, because I know you don't know, I'll just say, let me take you for the cesarean section because I want to make money, not because I really want to help you. And everywhere in the world, the percentage is supposed to be cesarean section in every community. It's supposed to be less than 25%. But you see some institutions, it goes to close to 75%. For whatever reason. But before we go into detail into this, it's very unhealthy to label somebody. We need to have good evidence. And in fact, I think probably this is one of the things that we need to do, because I think we can talk to Auditor General to go and investigate what's happening for us. And I know the medical aids are regulated. The doctors are regulated by the HPSA. But the private hospitals are not regulated. Hence, we've got this thing that happened in KZN, in St. Augustine's Hospital, where Tissue Act, which is outdated, even that act, but they were continuing doing that type of thing. And in fact, but fortunately, they've agreed that they made a mistake. I mean, they did something, and they've been fined. Whether that fine is worth it, and what is going to happen to those doctors, those people that were doing it, these are some of the things. But there's no regulation there. They're not being regulated in so much that one was thinking, I don't know. That probably, now that we've got a regulator for the medical aid schemes, can't we, before we make a law, because it needs to be enacted, we could ask them to look into these other private health industries. It's something that we need to think about as a portfolio committee, so that we can suggest to the department that, look, you need to do something here. But not in a way of saying that they must drop their profits, but in a way that everything must be ethical, must be above board. It must be something that you can say, I did a cesarean section in this lady because the baby was too big for the pelvis. Not just to do something because you say every Tuesday I do cesarean sections, I just do cesarean sections on that day, even if there's no indication. So these are some of the things that we need to look into. But I think we need good evidence, so that you don't take somebody who hasn't done something. You make sure that there's evidence to it, not deal with the gut. But obviously, when you investigate, it starts by getting information that there's something, and then you investigate. I would request that probably we need to talk to Auditor General or anybody that can investigate. In fact, the CMS, I think the Council for Medical Aid Schemes, we can ask them to give us faces to what's happening on the cesarean section in each institution, even in the private doctors themselves. Yeah, even HPSA can give us that information because they are the regulators. Thank you very much for that. It's a very sensitive issue, but we need to handle it because we've not been handling the private healthcare industry well. Okay, Makan.
I think I was just going to add, Dr. Dehanam has just reminded me of my daughter, also who got the same, was an elderly primer, and the doctor told the gynecologist that she was going to make a cesarean section at 18, 16 hours. When I went there was nothing wrong. My daughter was progressing well, there was no indication, and then I refused a cesarean section, as that she got normal vertex delivery. I agree with it, that does happen. And again, the issue of, I was also at Free Hospital one time to help there during one of the strikes. What I noticed there, the private doctors send their patients for cesarean sections at the hospital, whereas they are taking the money there. But when now the actual process is going to be done, they send them to hospital to minimize the costs because they are not paying. And then I asked in one of the matrons, what is happening here? Do these doctors pay for this money? Because now they are using the equipment for the hospital, public hospital, whereas the patients are theirs. and then sometimes they are elected as the receptions. Then they are called now to deliver, to make the reception in the patient inside the public hospital, using the equipment, everything, in a sense, from the hospital, Whereas he has been paid by the patient in the private sector. I think that also we must just have what is happening. Is that due to private public partnership or what? Thank you.
You know, there's something called ROPS, which is remuneration, I can't remember the but it says you get paid after work, exactly. So you run your private thing during the day, and then when, you run the public institution during the day, doing your professional work. And then when you have finished here, you go and do your private work. And what happens is that those people, when they do their private work, if I'm a gynecologist, when I see somebody who needs a cesarean surgeon, I bring him here to the hospital, and the surgery is paid. But I do the surgery in the hospital. Now, this was done to try and curtail the shortage of doctors. But now we've got to balance. Is it working for us, that thing? Because nobody has ever looked at this ROPS, whether is it really helping us, or we're just draining the taxpayers' money. And it's something that we need to look into. And we need to ask the department. They still have the ROPS, and I know they're complaining about it, because that's what they're doing. They end up using the facility for their own benefit. Much as we've got shortage, but there are certain things that we should not allow. Like President Mbeki said one time, better few and better. I mean, that code, better few and better. But at the same time, I mean, we've gotten that crucial balance where we're trying to balance. We don't want the shortage, but at the same time, people are abusing the system to their own accord. But these are the things that we need to educate each other, and we need to do the investigation. I'm hoping that you're following that on what Unda Dehanar was saying. I'm hoping that probably they documented what they were saying, that your child should have a cesarean section, and your child ended up, because that documentation would be very good, that a doctor was going to say the child needs a cesarean section, only to find that the person, he should give us reasons why he thought that they needed, especially if they documented that. It would be interesting to get those notes. Okay. Thanks, sir. The last one, Matuwe.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say, Chairperson, except to add on what Dr. Kanaro is saying about the medical, private hospitals and doctors. I know that this year I was sick, and I didn't know that I have developed sugar diabetes. So I went to a private hospital. I found a doctor who insisted that I came walking. She wanted me to be admitted in ICU. Then, yes, because the way she was telling me that I can die now, and I told her no, I came walking and I didn't even know that I was diabetic, so I can still go home and take medication. But because they can corner you and threaten you, and when you are sick, really, nobody wants to die knowing that I'm going to die. We are going to die, but if you can avoid it, you avoid it at all costs. Instead of being admitted in ICU, they forced me to be admitted in high care. On Monday, when I was perusing my mail. One mail was from that hospital just for one night. I was admitted, I think, at 18 hours, and I was discharged again at either 15 or 14 hours the following day. The bill is 6,800 rand. Now, when I was admitted now here at Netcare, I slept for nearly 8 days and 8 nights. The bill there is 1,600. That one for 196,000. This one is 1,000. No, that's a, it's how much? 7? No, 15,000. I'm sorry. But if you calculate 6 for 1 night and 15 for 8 nights, you will see how people rip us off via medical aid schemes. Now, I want to add to that there. When we also call them for whatever they are doing, because to me it's a concern that they, why do they force to, and it's not just me, because I have one friend whose sister was also admitted, and she was forced to be admitted in high care. And by 2, 3, 4 days, the medical aid was exhausted, then they discharged her. But she was worse than when she was admitted. So we need to check as to what is happening? Why are they doing this to us as patients? Because really, if I come walking, then you want me to go and be admitted in ICU. What does that mean? Next to a corpse? So that you must get the money? So these are the things that we really need to take up very seriously. Because if they are doing this to us, what about an ordinary person in the street? Oh, yeah. But also I wanted to check. As the committee, don't we have minutes of the committees that we have been, you know, shelving, and when are we going to adopt them?
Let me start with that one. I think I forgot to request members to agree that all the minutes that we have at the beginning of the year, we just will have a day that we look through them. We've got all of them. We just look through them. I forgot to request that, if you agree. Coming to what you're saying, what? Okay, is there something?
No, there's nothing.
Oh, okay. No. You can say you're admiring my hair when it's not there. You can say you're admiring the area which has hair, which does not have hair now. You know, somebody was. No, this is silly. Probably you don't need to narrate it. But he was. I hope there are no journalists here. he was talking about. You know, the Muslims, you don't cut your beard. But there are certain areas where they cut their hair. Now somebody was saying, why did they cut their hair this side and don't cut their hair the other side? it's actually funny. This is really difficult to understand. Okay, but let's come to the... I think, Matume, this is what we've been talking about. You know, the private people, they must be there. They are assisting us in one way or another. But if we could have a situation where they could be transparent and show us that much as they want profit, they are not doing it unethically. That's all that we're interested in. They've got to survive, they've got to continue, and using the fact that we don't know. And sometimes it's very much good when you're working with people who don't know. I think you know it even in politics. It's very good, I mean, it's very easy to go to my rural locations, they will say no, and tell them that vote me, I'm going to do 1, 2, and 3 for you. Because they don't know, and they know me to be a doctor, they just vote me, they say, no, we want you. Because they don't know, and I'm using them for my own sake, without telling them the honest truth, what's happening. And even us, we are culprits on that. But this is something that, in so much that the department was talking of an ombudsman, where if there's something that you don't believe is right, you go to the ombudsman, who obviously is going to be a medical person, somebody in the health sector, who's going to say, no, this is why this was done, and so on, and ask those people, why did you do this 1, 2, and 3? But the problem with health is that when you collapse now, you're not going to ask the ombudsman, should I pay this money or should I not pay this money? Because it's emergencies. If everything in health was cold, it would be better. But not everything is cold. So you can collapse now, and when you go to the hospital, they say, if you don't pay 6,000, you might as well forget. We're not going to do anything. Now the ombudsman is going to be busy somewhere in a meeting. So you're going to get... So. But we need to find a way of saying to them, we respect your presence, we want you to make money, but don't make it unethically. Don't make that money unethically. This is what you need. And when you go to a doctor, when you're sitting in front of a doctor, you depend solely on that person, on the honesty of that person. That honestly, this is what I would do. But a lot of things get done because somebody, in fact, they actually look, if you don't have a medical aid, they don't give you a lot of things. But if you've got a medical aid, they will do a whole lot of things because they know that they're not going to be able to say, no, I don't want this, do I want that one, and so on. And the medical aids are not helping us because they should. The medical aids should be helping us in the sense that when they get that bill, they should be asking them, why, doc, did you do this and that and that? Was it really necessary to do this type of thing? They should protect us, but somehow they don't protect us. I'm not sure why. Okay, thank you very much for that. But we are going to note it and we are going to find a way of seeing how the department is, in fact, not the department, but how do we get somebody who's going to regulate? Even there, when you get somebody, you need somebody who's honest. So sometimes it becomes difficult. There was a situation where those who didn't want private practice, I'm talking about doctors, because I happen to be a doctor, those who didn't want private practice wanted public health. They were very much against those who are in private practice. And those who are in private practice were very much against those who are in the public sector because they are concerning them. But you need somebody who's going to understand both, who's going to be honest with integrity and balance things, and not try, because some of them, they want to kill the private healthcare sector, the others want to kill the public healthcare sector. So you need somebody who's going to be honest and objective and work on evidence. But it will be done. Thank you.
Chair, I wanted to know, are we going to discuss further to say, for instance, I've suggested the PHC. I mean, whoever is jotting those things down, are we going to have a meeting where we say what is it that we would like to know or discuss with them, you know? Because I'm thinking another thing that I've forgotten to mention when I was talking is to look into different models used by different provinces, because all the provinces are not doing the same thing in terms of health, particularly PHC as well, you know. There might be similarities there and there, like the referral system, blah, 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 but the solid practical model of how they do service delivery differs from province to province because of, you know, obvious reasons to some extent. So I think it's very important that as they come and present or we interact with them, we also understand how they work with province and, you know, why and all those things.
Thanks, you know, you can switch off here. No, what we usually do when we call people here, we just leave it at a very broad area, reminding ourselves that our work is to do an oversight. We're not suggesting to them how they should be doing it, but we want to know how are they doing and what are they doing at that time. So I took it that what we're suggesting, and most of the suggestions, what we're going to do, we're going to compile them as looking at the dates and the days that we're supposed to have our committee meetings. And we're going to email all of them to you so that you can look. And we'll say specifically that we're calling this for this. But I'm taking you the district health system or primary health care. We'll be calling those managers that are handling primary health or district health in their provinces, all the provinces. Let's have one person from Eastern Cape, one from Free State, one, so that they can, even if they do differently, we're not going to say do the same thing, but we're going to see how they are doing it, because it's one of the priorities. Exactly. And they'll know when they're listening, they'll see what Gauteng is doing, what so that they can learn from, but we'll call all of them. And I think the department is in pains in trying to make sure that the province, we don't have a pseudo federal system. When the policies are set by national, every province do as it has been set by the province, because they, at the moment, they do as they wish, and they've got their own control on the funds and whatnot. Okay.
Chairperson, I forgot to raise this two or three issues. I know we have been talking about either producing a document that is going to guide us when we do oversight, whether we call it a template or a questionnaire. I haven't seen it, but we have promised us that we are going to do it. Can we get it maybe next year? Or maybe should we say we all note what we need to see in that sort of questionnaire. So that when we visit hospitals or clinics, to me it's going to help us like compiling a report. Or when we talk of ambulances in hospitals, in some hospitals we don't ask, in other hospitals we do ask, but if we have a sort of a questionnaire, then it will help us. Number two, every time we talk of, what do you call yourself? Doctors. But I also know that there are other type of doctors that we never talk to them. The, you know, the, yeah, they call it the floor x-rays, those who throw bones. So when do we think, you know, we need to talk to them? Because we know every winter we get people who die because of this circumcision. We know of people who die or who get help, who also have AIDS. So don't we think that one day, one time, I don't know who are we going to call, but if they are having an organized formation, we can just call one or two and then maybe let them also explain to us what is it that they are doing, because we know that they are interacting with the government, but we don't know how. So that they must also ask for the visa that they must drink and maybe... yeah. And then what was my third question? Now I forgot because I'm talking.
Just on this...
You see, guiding documents when you visit the institution doing oversight is very, very important because it guides us. We are doing a common work. I think I want to agree with her that we need that as we come next year. Also, we must call traditional villas. I go to them very often. I know they are very good people. Thanks.
Okay. Since I've seen you on my pen. The document, you know, I prepared the document. It was actually last December. But what discouraged me was that when I was sitting with the chair of chairs, I found out that much as health and education have been prioritized, we can't just walk to Bara and say the babies are dead, I have died there, and we go according to that schedule and ask questions. In fact, when we went with Umemwara, with Uema to Bara, I had to fight with Chair of Chairs that we needed to go there. He was refusing. He was saying that you don't need to go there. Why should you be going there? Whoever was in pain. I had to force him that, look, we need to go and make some suggestions and see what's going on. But ultimately, then I said, it's going to be useless because we are told that we go to two provinces there, yeah? And even then, we are told by them, I really got discouraged, and I said, but we can revive it. Because for me, it was something that if I wake up and I say, I want to go in to Charlotte Maclay and see what's happening, unannounced, that's the thing that I'm supposed to be using. But now, if I tell them that on such and such a day I'll be coming there, they will clean everything and make sure that everything's clean. And even if you use that list, you'll find everything good, yet the problems are there and they've hidden them. So I got so discouraged that I decided this, but we'll try and put it back. The traditional healership, I think, you know, we've got to be honest here. It's something that was done from 1652, where it was a way of pushing down the dignity of others over the others. And it went on, but it did not die because people were living with traditional healership then. But what has happened in years, because we got colonized and things changed and they tried to kill it. Now, nobody knows exactly what is a good traditional healer, what is a bad one. We don't know. Now we're trying to revive it because now we've gained our independence. But in gaining our independence, there's a lot of us. I just wake up in the morning and then I say I'm a traditional healer. And then I call you to come to me. Yet I'm not a real traditional healer. And in fact, this is the problem. Because you'll meet this organization today. They say we are for the traditional healers. You meet them and you talk to them and say, okay, let's see how we can go forward. When you leave that meeting, somebody phones you and say, no, you met the wrong ones. We are the right ones, and we want to come and talk to you. When you talk to those ones, there's another group, because it's about money making. I believe probably there are good ones. I don't want to say there are no good ones. Maybe George will help us with the good ones. George will help us with these good ones. But I think probably what we need to do, we'll need to advertise it and say, on such and such a day, we want the leadership of traditional leaders to come here, and we'll be helping the department. And most of them, they got, this is where I wanted us to be honest, when the health was under the leadership of Uma Momandu Shabalala, she was giving an upper hand to the traditional healership. And with the present administration, there's not much that is given to them, and they are trying, and they are used to being incorporated. Now we need to find a way of calling them here and saying, tell us, all of you, we'll try and get all these organizations and say, come. In fact, I've talked to a minister. He said, we'd rather do it here in Parliament, so that by the time they go there, they've been screened here. We call them, we say, we want to understand how you're doing your things. Tell us how you're doing them, and then when you're united, you can actually add your views, and then they can meet the development. I think it's something that we need to do. We'll have to prioritize it, especially that we've got to George. George is going to help us very much in getting the ones that he knows. Okay, I'm not sure which hand came first, whether it's Memora or you.
No,
Emma, did you have a hand up? No. Okay.
Memora decided to give me a chance. No. It's what you raised, the issue of unannounced. The members of the correctional services have got. Am I out of order?
No.
Okay. I saw you remembering something. No, I'm just saying the members of the correctional services, I think the members of the PC of correctional services, have got some identification which allows them to go to any prison at any time. Can't we talk to the department so that there's an agreement between us and them about identification? You see, the problem is that if you just appear and say, I'm a member of parliament and all that, it also creates problems because of the situation at Belonoma Hospital. You know? So it's important so that it gives certainty between us, so that they can communicate with their institutions to say, there are so many members of parliament. The only way in which they identify themselves is the following. But once they are there, you can also have a process of checking whether the person is really the person who he or she claims to be. But you can't stop them from visiting your institutions, including clinics. They can come at any time, any place. So it assists, because probably the chair of chairs has got a problem that if you go anywhere, it must be from his budget. So the issue might not be that you should not visit. The issue is that it is going to incur costs. But if I'm in Johannesburg and there are problems in Johannesburg, or I'm in Bloemfontein, it is a problem there, I can go there. I don't need Parliament to finance my movement towards there. So I'm just suggesting it's what you raised.
Maybe what we need to say to that, I think that there are two things. Yeah. There are unannounced visits in my constituency, where I already have a car, I stay at home. I don't think you've got a problem if you're staying in Free State. There's no reason why you can't go to Pelonomi or go to the clinic without being known. You just go in there and you say, I'm a member of parliament too. And I don't think there's anybody who can throw you out of that. Okay. But if I don't know, then I'll get the information. I think then obviously it goes back to what we saw in Free State.
Yeah.
where that lady was saying that, look, I don't know you, you are coming to intimidate us and so on and so on. But as far as I know, from the province, if you are a member of parliament and an MPL, you've got the right of going to any institution unannounced. But the problem here in parliament is that much as we've got constituencies, there are areas that are not covered. Now, it is those areas that are not covered where you... Let me make an example. Let's say there was in George, there was this young kid who was not allowed to have a kidney transplant and was taken out of hospital. You remember that it was in the media. Now, if there's nobody who is in that constituency in the portfolio committee, then obviously somebody could say, Chair of Chairs, can you help us? We want to go in there and see what's happening. And obviously that is going to incur, because it's not his budget. It's our budget, but it's controlled by him. That's where the problem, my problem is in that one. But let me know this one of being chased out of hospital. I've never been chased, probably I'm lucky. But let me hear this one. Okay.
I was chased out of Eden Bell Hospital.
Chased out of?
Yeah.
Oh.
The CEO phoned the MEC and she refused me permission to go inside.
Oh, no. So you had the same experience, Emma?
No, what I was trying to say is that I suppose that we need access cards of some sort. And everybody should be informed that if somebody comes with such a card, you know, this is how you validate that this person is a member of parliament. Because people don't realize that. If they're always, if they know that at any time someone might come, then people start working. And indirectly, it impacts on service delivery. You know, the few things that you can do, because now you're thinking that, hey, what if a member of parliament just pops up? Then bit by bit, everyone, because it will change the culture. And if it can be, if the minister can support us and even announce it on TV to say we've developed maybe members of parliament access card to any hospital, any clinic, a public, blah, 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 and anyone must expect it anytime, you'll see things will change, even the CEOs, even attitude. Because with us, it's even difficult. Immediately, they realize or somebody knows that, ooh, DA, I've seen it on TV, oh, forget, you won't get that chance. And it makes things difficult. Because we're working towards making, service delivery better.
Chair, before you respond, I'm saying it is wrong that people chase the honorable member, you see? And we need not duplicate things here. As a member of parliament, we must hold the department to explain how does it happen. How do we, they are hindering on our oversight. And to produce a membership card, that is enough. We only need to complain to the relevant MEC must, or the minister or the department must come and explain. Are they not, how we cannot access any health institution? You see? Therefore, let's rather complain and say, on this particular occasion, this is what happened. And these people, we don't need to duplicate things. Thanks.
Yeah, I know the minister has said in public, I'm not sure whether we're all there, where he said, members of parliament, please help us go to these institutions unannounced. The minister has said that. It will just be a question of reminding him. But I think for me, the most important thing is this one.
Yeah.
If we go and use this one, and if it so happens, Mike, that you get chased, I think we'll have to take it up with the minister, whoever is in authority on that particular day, not the day after, but on that particular day, to answer why do you refuse entry, Mike, in a particular place. And I think we need to take it up, but I'm going to talk to him. But I think the most important thing is this one, that we should be carrying them around when we go. And we can go to any, whether it's your constituency or it's not your constituency, if I'm traveling from here to Mthatha by car, I've got a right to get in Fort Beaufort Hospital and say, look, I want to check what's going on, as I'm on my way to Mthatha. And they mustn't refuse me entry.
Yeah.
Because
you know what, they look at this thing,
Is it you? Are you sure they called the other one?
I'm sure mine is going to be worse because I still have hair. Mine is going to be worse because I had hair. Now I don't have it. That I talked about, which has got to do with our budget. I think it's something that we need to discuss in our caucuses. I think we need to discuss it there, that if there happens to be a problem where there's none of us, and you've got to travel there, you've got to sleep there, and you've got to use transport when you are there, how do we get that transport when we've said health is a priority? Because we need to do that, but we'll have to discuss it in our caucuses. I want us to round up now. To thank you and say have a happy Christmas and a prosperous new year.